This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Kenya, Rwanda, Cote d'Ivoire are posting decent returns, but even there, it must be noted that those growth rates really should be significantly higher. I'm thinking 6-7% if they are to make a dent in unemployment, particularly youth unemployment.
That's Harry Verhoeven, a researcher at the Center on Global Energy Policy, on a new World Bank report on good economic growth this year in some African countries. Details coming up. Also, Nigeria's Supreme Court upholds President Bola Tinubu's election victory. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. More than a week after Hamas infiltrated Israel with a surprise attack, it seems the region stands on the brink of war with fears of a wider conflict. I first asked our reporter in Jerusalem, Linda Gradstein, who is closely monitoring the conflict, if the situation is escalating.
It is escalating. I mean, you know, Hamas continues to fire rockets at Israel, including longer range rockets that are hitting the Tel Aviv area. There was one rocket that hit a suburb of Tel Aviv and did severe damage to one of the buildings. And at the same time, Israeli bombing raids on Gaza are stepping up as well. There are more people being killed on both sides. And for the first time, actually, Israeli tanks and troops went briefly into northern Gaza in what it called a targeted raid. But nobody seems to be backing down on this at all.
The military saying the raid was carried out yesterday in preparation for the next stages of combat?
Yes, you know, Israel's been talking about a ground assault now for, you know, it'll be on Saturday, it'll be 3 weeks since this started when Hamas and thousands of Hamas fighters crossed the border from Gaza into Israel and just attacked all of these different communities. For over 2 weeks now, more than 300,000 Israeli reservists are massed at the border. There are tanks. I think Israel sort of hasn't decided if it's going to do a widespread incursion of Gaza. And if that happens, then, you know, you're talking about months of fighting, or they're going to do sort of pinpointed things. But Israel has basically said over and over, Israeli officials, military officials, that Israel cannot coexist anymore with Hamas after what they did. Now, Hamas has thousands of fighters in Gaza in a series of underground tunnels. So any kind of ground invasion, urban warfare is going to be a very long process. But as sort of signal that nobody expects this to be short, the former chief of staff, Benny Gantz, basically said that Israelis who have been evacuated either from the southern areas near Gaza or the northern borders near Lebanon should prepare to be away from their homes for at least 3 months.
And world leaders, including UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, Turkey's President Tayyip Erdogan, even Vladimir Putin. One is saying this could escalate. The other is saying we need humanitarian aid in the area. I mean, is this making any dent in the mindset of Israel?
I don't think so. I mean, look, Israel's main issue is the hostages, first of all. And Qatar has been trying to negotiate a release for at least the women and children. We just got a report that two of the children being held hostage are Hungarian citizens, according to Budapest. That's something new. But we know that there are quite a few Thai agricultural workers who were kidnapped, as well as dual Israeli Americans, Brits, Canadians. So for Israel, that's the first priority. And I think that's the reason that they're holding off on a ground invasion. At the same time, there have been press reports that the United States has asked Israel to hold off partly because to get some more humanitarian aid into Gaza, which is really on the brink of a collapse, and also to get more American air defenses into the region in case American troops are targeted. But the sense is that Israel will do some kind of ground invasion in the next few days, although it's been like that now for almost 2 weeks.
And the UN is asking for delivery to enter into Gaza. Is the main delivery fuel?
Yes. So Israel has said it will not allow fuel into Gaza because it says that Hamas has fuel, and it's published a photo of all these tanks that they say are full of fuel that Hamas has been using for rockets and to run these tunnels and things like that that they have. Israel is allowing in food and medicine. However, it's not enough. There are an estimated 750,000 Palestinians in the southern city of Rafah, which many of them have left the north after Israel warned residents to leave and said they should flee south and they'll be safer in the south. There have been, however, Israeli bombing raids targeting the entire Gaza Strip, not just the north, but also the south. And the bureau chief of Al Jazeera in Gaza, Wael Dubuh, his family was killed in an Israeli strike on the Nusayrat refugee camp. He sent them there, which is in central Gaza. He sent them there to keep them safe.
And lastly, the death toll on both sides, where does it stand right now?
So the death toll in Israel is 1,400, mostly civilians. Mostly from that first day of the Hamas assault almost 3 weeks ago. The death toll on the Palestinian side is over 7,000. Those figures, though, are from the Palestinian Health Ministry, which Israel says is run by Hamas. The ministry says it is independent. It is not run by Hamas. And there's really no way to independently check those figures, but it's certainly thousands of Palestinians who were killed.
Linda Gratstein, who's closely monitoring the conflict, she talked to me from Jerusalem. Deaths are adding up by the thousands, and tragic images from both sides of the Gaza conflict are circulating on Palestinian and Israeli social media, fueling mutual hatred that is becoming more ingrained as the conflict deepens. Jan Bochat spoke with both sides in Israel and the Palestinian territories. Marcus Harton narrates.
The violence has been nonstop as Israeli warplanes bomb Gaza, while Hamas continues to fire rockets into Israel. West Bank protests broke out after last Friday's prayers, and confrontations between Israeli forces and Palestinians left several dead. For the first time in almost 20 years, Israeli jets attacked a West Bank town. On the border with Lebanon, violence is also escalating, raising concerns on both sides that a new war between Israel and Hezbollah might be about to begin. On social media, graphic scenes of violence are everywhere, available to everyone. The Israeli government posted video that purports to show body cam footage of a Hamas militant shooting at a civilian vehicle and a dash cam video from inside the car. VOA could not independently confirm the authenticity of the video. The unfiltered and sometimes false information fuels mutual hatred that is becoming more intense and ingrained in people on both sides of this conflict. Nadush Mohammed is a Ramallah resident. She says, these children you see, these quadruplets, their parents waited 16 years to have them. Now they are killed. What did these kids do to Israel? Mohammed lives far from Gaza in a comfortable house in Ramallah. She says she would prefer to be dead than watch what is coming to her phone every day. After seeing it, she says, it's impossible to even think about living in peace with an Israeli. She says, we are different from them. We saw the treatment of Hamas towards children and the treatment of Israel. What they say about the burning of children is not true. Hamas treats its hostages very well. She refers to a video she saw released by the militant group Hamas, claiming it is taking good care of Israeli children it is holding hostage. The content of that video is unverified. For several days, Ramallah's streets have been full of people protesting the Israeli attacks on Gaza. In Israeli communities close to the Gaza border, life has all but stopped. In Ashkelon, the biggest city near Gaza, Few go out into the streets. The sirens don't go off as often as they used to at the beginning of the war, but rockets keep coming from Gaza, aimed at them. In this once bustling marina, only a few people came for a stroll on a sunny afternoon. After several days at home, Yana decided to come out for a walk with her boyfriend Nikolai. Their realities are quite different from those of Nadush, but they strangely seem connected by the hatred they express. She says they showed videos of the soldiers who are kidnapped, of children who were pulled from vehicles. They raped girls in the squares in Gaza. I don't think there is a difference between them. They are the same. Yana, like Nadush, doesn't think it will ever be possible for Israelis and Palestinians to coexist after this. She says you cannot live with them in peace. In the end, they will kill us, because they are taught in school that we are their enemies. Yana refers to videos she has seen on social media that claim to show Palestinian schools teaching children to view Israelis as their enemies. That content is also unverified. Israelis and Palestinians have both grown up in a culture of mutual hatred and distrust. Many on both sides of this tragedy see death and destruction more than ever as the only solution. For Jan Boschot in Jerusalem, Marcus Harden, VOA News.
Nigeria's Supreme Court today upheld President Bola Tinubu's election victory in February. The ruling brings to an end a legal challenge brought by his two main rivals who argued that his victory was marred by irregularities. Reuters quoted Supreme Court Judge John Okoro as saying, "There is no merit in this appeal, and it is hereby dismissed." The decision gives Tinubu a clear mandate to govern Nigeria, which is grappling with double-digit inflation, foreign currency shortages, and a weakening naira, widespread insecurity, and crude oil theft. The judgment by 7 Supreme Court judges, which is final, follows a pattern seen in previous presidential elections that have been challenged in court. None of the court appeals has been successful. Atiku Abubakar of the People's Democratic Party and Peter Obi of the Labour Party finished second and third respectively in February, but rejected the results. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. A new World Bank report says Kenya, Cote d'Ivoire, and Rwanda are among the fastest growing economies in Africa in 2023. The report attributes their strong performances to a number of factors, including sound macroeconomic policies and investments in infrastructure. But Harry Verhoeven, a senior research scholar at the Center on Global Energy Policy at Columbia University, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that it is not so much what those countries did right as much as what South Africa, Sudan, Nigeria, and other African countries did wrong.
Because what really stands out when you look at the last couple of years, but including 2023, is the underperformance of some of Africa's big economies. And that, of course, also brings down not only average growth rates, but most importantly, things like job creations, which is really above all what Africa needs, and which the World Bank in its latest report rightly underscored should be the absolute priority of policymakers. So, yeah, Kenya, Rwanda, Cote d'Ivoire are posting decent returns, but even there, it must be noted that those growth rates really should be significantly higher. I'm thinking here 6-7% if they are to make a dent in unemployment, particularly youth unemployment.
It said that there's a group of other countries that stand out as pretty good performers, including Ethiopia, Uganda, Benin, Botswana, even the DRC, where there's been a lot of conflict. How do you read that?
Well, there is some growth in, for example, a place like Ethiopia and Congo. And some of that, like in the case of Ethiopia, is kind of a return after some years of horrific economic results and horrific humanitarian crisis and conflict. So almost always you get this kind of rebound effect. But again, in those kinds of countries too, what we really would need to see for a transformation of these economies to happen, for meaningful creation of opportunities for people in cities, as well as crucially in the countryside, is sustained growth, for example, over a period of a decade of 6 or 7%. Now, Ethiopia used to have that prior to 2018 and the political transition, the turbulence, the war then. Ethiopia did post very impressive results that were also coupled with very important social advances. For example, in decreasing neonatal mortality, in giving people increased access to medication to deal with HIV/AIDS, road construction, connecting people to the grid, those kinds of things. Now, with the current kind of growth trajectory that we're seeing, that's unlikely to happen. It's unlikely to happen for two reasons. One is that it simply doesn't generate enough tax revenues for potentially the state to drive forward these agendas. Nor do we see the private sector, the formal private sector, actually growing enough, again, to create the kind of jobs that would meaningfully transform what ordinary Africans have in terms of disposable income. And so this latest report in many ways is sobering because, as I said, even the good performers or those that are seen as doing relatively well are kind of more doing okay.
Despite political tensions in Kenya, let's focus on Kenya. Its growth remains strong, and it's even seen as the economic engine of Africa. I've heard it referred to like that. Why can't other African countries follow in Kenya's footsteps?
Well, Kenya does a number of basic things, I think, quite well, and those are important indeed for kind of sustained growth. Again, not as high as ideally you would like to see, or as perhaps the Kenyan government would like to see, but a relative degree of political stability. As you know, since the very contested election of 2007-2008 in Kenya, it's had a number of very closely fought elections, but none of these have really led to the kind of major political violence that we saw 15 years ago. So the fact that Kenya's political elites do manage to come to some degree of compromise and kind of collectively decide at least not to sink the economy, or at least not to kind of torpedo the political stability of the country, as happened, for example, in Sudan or Ethiopia, certainly helps. Two, what Kenya does have that is also quite important and sometimes different from other African states is a profound respect for property, and associated with that, monetary policy as pursued by the central bank.
That's Henry Verhoeven, a senior research scholar at the Center on Global Energy Policy at Columbia University. He was speaking to VOA's Carol Van Dam from New York. The International Monetary Fund has cautioned African nations about the possibility of a regional economic downturn and the ripple effects China's slowing economy could bring. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
Africa and China have forged economic ties over the past 20 years, making the Asian giants the continent's largest trading partner. Africa exports metal, minerals and fuel to China while importing manufactured goods and machinery from that country. The International Monetary Fund says that partnership is threatened by China's economic slowdown, its aging population, trade tensions, geopolitics, and the ongoing impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. Kenya-based businessman Adan Ibrahim imports vehicle and motorcycle parts from China. He says it was difficult for some time to access Chinese companies due to COVID-19 health restrictions.
The visa restriction was a bit tough, because they only allow a few number of people per month. Up to now, they have not reopened well. In terms of the movement of people within the country, even they're restricted. When you travel to China, you must be undertaken through a serious checks on health issues. There were some quite challenges in terms of both the economic parts and also the health-wise.
In December 2022, China lifted coronavirus restrictions that had prevented easy movement of goods and people. Gerishon Ikiara is an international economics lecturer. He says the economic problems faced by China and African countries affect the trade relations.
When African economies are affected either by droughts or other problems that may affect the various sectors, the negative effect is felt in China. And if it is also happening in China, the negative effect is felt within Africa. So it is important that both the Chinese economy and African economies are doing well. That will create a more healthy trading relationship.
Ibrahim says that as China shifts away from COVID-19 controls, the price of goods has increased and no customers can buy them.
The goods that we used to buy with the relatively cheap prices before the COVID are now triple the price that we currently buy with. And that means the customers will reduce. If the good prices are increased, there will be no customers. And also ourselves, we normally downsize or we normally reduce our stocks so that we do not lose.
China's economic recovery from the pandemic has slowed in recent months due to a sluggish property market and weak consumer spending. China's trade data showed that exports and imports continue to decline as demand for Chinese goods waned. Ikiara says Africa needs to find new trading partners to develop its economies.
The Chinese economy is slowing down. Africa needs to diversify its trading partners and diversifying to either for exports or imports to Asia, to other parts of Africa, Latin America, and the U.S. If there's a problem with our exports to China, we need to look for new markets.
The IMF is urging African countries to diversify their economies, increase regional trade integration, and create a favorable business environment for local and international corporations to thrive. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
On VOA Africa Radio, we let the sound tell you the story. News, sports, science, and entertainment available to you 24/7. Tune in on your local FM stations. We are also available on the medium waves, 909 kHz and 1530 kHz. Our short waves are 6080, 15580, 4930, 15165, 15580 and 17530 kHz. VOA Africa, your trusted source for news and information.
A new study concludes that racism towards black people is growing in Europe, with Germany, Austria, and Finland showing the highest rates of discrimination and harassment. The European Union Agency for Fundamental Rights commissioned the survey of first and second generation black immigrants in 13 EU countries. It found that in the 6 years since the previous study, the proportion of respondents who felt racially discriminated against in the past 12 months had risen by 10 percentage points to 34%. In Austria and Germany, the proportion was 64%, almost twice the previous level of 33% in Germany, and a significant increase from the 42% recorded in Austria 6 years earlier. The next worst was Finland with 54%. The report entitled Being Black in the EU reports that Portugal and Sweden had the lowest rates of harassment and, along with Poland, had the lowest racial discrimination rates. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.